This is Soulful Living on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Terry Williams.
Hey, wherever you are in the world today, I welcome you to another 30 minutes of Soulful Living here at Empower Radio. My guest today, Holly Bellabuono, I hope I get that right, empowers people, particularly women, with the experiences of herbal medicine through workshops, speaking engagements, courses both online and offline, and through her writings. She has been living with herbs probably forever. Today we're going to talk about her work and some of the history and traditions of herbal medicine from all over the world. We're going to talk about her latest work, Women Healers of the World, the Traditions, History, and Geography of Herbal Medicine. So welcome to Soulful Living, Holly.
Thank you, Terry. It's good to be here.
Yeah, okay. So give me a quick pronunciation of your name. I want to make sure we get it right.
Okay, Holly Bellabuono.
Awesome. Thank you. And let's jump right in. Tell me about your journey and what your definition of herbal medicine is.
Okay, so let's see. My journey in general, the big picture is I've been an herbalist for about 20 years. And the smaller picture is this project, the Women Healers in particular, has been the past 7 years. It's been a big chunk of my path on the herbal path, you might say. And it's been focusing on herbal medicine. I teach people about edibles and medicinals. We really connect with the plants. I really try to encourage a relationship with the plants. I think the spiritual connection there is key for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I brought together a lot of women, 31 women from 20 countries, actually, and 16 healing traditions, who I felt really embodied the spirit of herbal medicine. They worked with plants in some capacity, and I featured them in this book. It's really a celebration, honestly. It's to celebrate and honor a lot of women in different modalities. They're midwives, chemists, ethnobotanists, herbalists, nurses, and physicians, a whole spectrum of occupations that somehow use plants. And so it's to honor them because a lot of women throughout history have not received that recognition in science and research, and I wanted to provide that.
Well, one of the things that I really enjoyed with the book, and let me tell you, it's so inclusive of so many different teachings that I have not even made it halfway through. I find myself having to go back and relearn, reread. But what I really found was herbal medicine is really complementary to any field of study, of traditional medical study or spiritual study. And something that dawned on me this morning was that the general public, you know, the listeners and myself included, we include herbal medicine in our lives without really even knowing about it. Like every time we reach for that cup of tea, I believe we're experiencing some type of herbal medicinal value.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you're right. It is applicable across the board. Almost every healing modality uses plants in some way, whether it's aromatherapy or pharmacology, or more, you know, spiritual applications like flower essences. And we use plants every day without thinking about it. Ethnobotany studies how we use plants. We use them for food and for structures and for paint and for scent. But to think about them as a healing agent, an ally, really, in healing, really brings it into the medicinal realm and to people who are helping each other feel better. Nurses and doctors in hospitals use plants and might not realize it. Aromatherapists and acupuncture and chiropractors use plants, especially in the form of homeopathy. But yeah, it's everywhere, and it has been for centuries. So it's really exciting when you discover how people have used plants in the past and how we're using them now.
Yeah, and you know, you say centuries, and I think of it as really since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
You know, since the dawn of human beings. Animals do it naturally, but human beings, you know, since we were created, however you look at that creation, you know, whether it's the religious aspect, scientific, whatever, however you look at creation, we have been using herbal practices forever. When I talk about shamanic work, I talk about that since the dawn of time, cultures have had what is considered a shaman. They might not call it a shaman, but they've had that. And I think of parents, mothers, kind of like that along those practices. You know, you talked about in one of the chapters, I can't remember exactly which one it was right now, but in one of them, you mentioned where the herbalists were kind of like the mamas, the go-to person. And I think that that's what moms are. That's what parents are. Infusing the aspects of herbal medicine just enhances that, you know, a bazillion times.
Yeah, and that also touches on another point, which is something that I learned throughout this process of writing this book, was that a lot of the women that I interviewed had mentors. Mm-hmm. They were kind of taken under the wing by another person, whether it was their mom or their grandmother or a brother or a friend, who kind of showed them the ropes and showed them the way to move forward in business practice and in communication with the plants and in, you know, being a healer, is that a lot of these women had a mentor, mm-hmm. which I think is really important, and it's something that I never had. I kind of jumped into herbalism kind of on a wing and a prayer and just kind of
yeah, I read that both of your parents were involved in, your mom was a nurse and your father was a pharmacologist, right?
A pharmacist, yep.
Yeah, which both do use those practices, but gosh, not to the degree that you do. And you live it, you breathe it, you teach it. It's what you do, it's who you are.
Yeah, and it was kind of a, I don't want to say a tough road, but it was, it wasn't laid out for me as it might have been if there had been a guide in my life, a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of these women had that, and that they contribute that to not necessarily their success, but their enjoyment and their pursuit of herbal medicine and being an empowered woman. Mm-hmm. And so I really encourage the students in my herb school to apprentice themselves or to mentor themselves to someone who has more experience than them, and also to be a mentor and to look for people who might need a little extra help and take them under your wing.
Mm. Well, it's interesting that you say that. Yesterday I attended a local leadership event here in Detroit, and one of the speakers, that was one of his most important pieces of advice, was to find a mentor and be a mentor. You know, he had seven yeah. different strategies, no matter what field of business that you're in. You know, we're all leaders, but we also need to be led. And
definitely.
We need to be led through mentorship.
Yeah, we always have something to learn, definitely.
I look at myself as, you know, the student and the teacher. Even if I'm teaching, I'm learning
exactly.
something. Somewhere along the way, I learned something. And you certainly must have gotten your handful of learning opportunities along the process of creating the book. What really led you to wanting to create the book, Women Healers of the World?
Well, I've been an herbalist for a long time and was really involved in the hands-on gardening part, the application of herbs, processing herbs and making tinctures and salves and different remedies, and running my apothecary. And I had written two books about that process, full of recipes and kind of how-to books on how to use herbs for medicine. And it really started becoming clear to me that there was a lot more to the heritage than that. It ran a lot deeper, you know, and the more I started looking into it, the more I realized it was a heritage of women's work that had not been exposed. People
mm-hmm.
weren't really aware of it. Like, when I was in high school and college, I learned a lot about male researchers and scientists and astronomers and physicists who really contributed to science. But I've realized that I really couldn't name hardly any women. I could name Marie Curie and Florence
right.
Nightingale and Elizabeth Blackwell, and that was about it. And mm-hmm. so I really started thinking, you know, in herbal medicine, particularly with plants, women have been that anonymous face behind all the knowledge we have, behind the entire tradition. And that really led me to start seeking out these women and writing down their stories.
And they're very powerful stories, each and every one of them. Like I said, I've only read, not even half of them, because I find myself so intrigued by the information that's present. But one of the ones that I really connected with was Ilsa Burgess, and partially because, you know, she started at a younger age learning about medicinals and not necessarily herbals, that's for sure. But she had a quote in there, something along the lines of, I really started looking at where I wanted to put my energy for the next decade or probably the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to give something back to the plants. And, you know, I'm half a century. I'm 53 years old this year. And I find myself having, you know, raised a family. We have 5 adults, and I'm at that place in my life where I'm really ready to shift my focus. And my husband and I have just moved, and we're in a small place, but you know, looking at how we can incorporate that aspect of really connecting with plant medicine, not just for healing, but for all of the aspects that it's going to bring. And Ilsa, from your book, she's the founder of a whole school of herbals.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And another woman that I interviewed, Mama Kia Ingenlath in Peru, had the exact same awareness, you know, like the light bulb going off. When she turned 50, she went to Machu Picchu with a shaman and did a ceremony where she decided that she was also going to dedicate the rest of her life to service and mm-hmm. to giving her energy out to others and being thankful, basically, for her life. And so she opened up an orphanage, and it was a very special orphanage. It's called Casa de Milagros, and she brought in orphans from the streets of Peru and not only fed them and clothed them, but actually adopted them as her own. So it wasn't the kind of orphanage where she sent the children to live with other families. They became mm-hmm. her own children. And when I talked with her, I think she had 35 children.
Wow.
She ran it as a nonprofit, teaching these children their native song, their native dance and language, and also about plants, teaching them how to grow their own food, how to make their own medicine. They created lots of greenhouses and hoop houses, so these kids were always outside experiencing nature in a very loving way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, which it just must have been such a beautiful blessing for all of the children involved and for her.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, Mama Kia passed away a few years ago. But the orphanage is still there. They're still caring for children. And they've also, you know, expanded a bit. They run a soup kitchen in Cuzco, Peru. They really help out their local community. It's definitely a service of the heart, which I find...
It sounds beautiful.
So inspiring.
Well, and on that subject, there were one or two other women that you interviewed along the process that have passed?
Yes. Mary Beath, I mm-hmm. interviewed her from Scotland. She was a Gaelic pharmacy sleuth, I guess you could call her. She recorded ancient traditions of Gaelic pharmacy, and she passed away during the 7-year process of writing this book.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, Mama Kia, Cascade Anderson Geller was an herbalist out of Oregon, very mm-hmm. well-known herbalist and midwife, and she passed away. Raylene Kawaea is a Polynesian kahuna healer. A number of women, I'm really happy to honor them in this book and to have them included because their lives were so amazing. And it just reminds us, you know, that it just keeps going generation after generation. And it's such an incredible heritage to be part of.
Well, and you not only, you dedicated your life to this and your work to that, but you also included chapters on women really centuries back that have had impact on herbal healing and using it in their lives.
That was so much fun. Researching these ancient women was so much fun because they had such personalities and they were such go-getters back in their day. And today it's kind of hard to imagine that because they lived, some of them, 1,500 years ago or 2,000 years ago back in Egypt. And we know very little about them. But what we can piece together, we really get a personality that they were awesome women who were empowering their communities and uplifting other women, too, such as Trotula. She was a physician and a clinician in Salerno, Italy, in the 1200s.
Wow.
She worked really hard to improve the lives of the young women in Italy who came to her clinic. And she used really basic plants, you know, red clover, yarrow, sage, rosemary. She used common things like goat's milk and honey, but really was an advocate for these young women in a time where they, you know, I imagine they didn't have much support.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really happy to include women such as her because it really opens our eyes to how important it is to help others anywhere you are and any time you are.
Oh, yeah. And I have felt that calling my whole life, you know, helping people, particularly women like you, particularly women. You know, I believe everybody on the planet should know some type of healing modality, whatever that it looks like for them. You know, some type of energy healing modality that they can include in their lives. Again, listeners, I'm chatting with Holly Villabono, and we are talking about healing your life with healing your life with herbal medicine, and particularly her book, Women Healers of the World, The Traditions, History, and Geography of Herbal Medicine. One of the things that I found really interesting in your work was several of the herbal practitioners were midwives. And I think that more and more today, in fact, I just saw a post on Facebook of somebody looking for a midwife. People are looking for these things to really enhance their lives. And to me, this book couldn't have come out at a more opportune time.
Yeah, I think the connection with midwifery is interesting because it's such a folk medicine. Herbal medicine and midwifery are both, you know, medicine of the people. It's the people's pharmacy. And it's an intimate personal connection, a one-on-one connection with your healer or your midwife that you don't tend to get in allopathic situations. And I agree with you. I think people are looking for that. And it's a shame that it's, I don't want to say underground. It's not quite underground, but it's not, it doesn't have the strength behind it that it used to. But I think that's changing. I think people are realizing, you know, they're coming around to this realization that this is something we don't want to lose. And that it's something that can be integrated with allopathic medicine combined with, you know, it doesn't have to be a one or the other. I think a lot of strength can be had from men and women who use herbs and who consult a midwife and who may see their family physician. You know, I think there's an integrative aspect there that is very important to benefit the person because healing can come from any direction.
And there's so many different choices out there available for people that you shouldn't focus on just one avenue of healing.
Mm-hmm.
Not, you know, there's just so many different things to choose from and that can uplift, inspire, and heal your life. So in your work, aside from the book, in your work, you offer both live in-person and online or distance learning certifications.
I run an herb school, and so people can get herbal training and certification. I do some, like, one-day fun workshops where we blend teas or we make salves, and then I do more in-depth workshops and retreats and intensives where people can really dive into folk medicine and herbal medicine and work to become community and family herbalists.
I think I need to take that. I think I need to be the next way involved in one of those this year. I think it's awesome. You know, one of the things that I absolutely love about the internet, and I've said this since I'm dating myself, but, you know, 25 years ago when I first heard the word internet, I knew that it was something that I had to be a part of, partially because of the ability to learn and connect with people from all over the world. One of the questions that I had regarding herbs and buying the herbs, which I know you have many valuable resources on your website besides the distance learning, you have your books and you have tinctures available on the site and salves and teas that we could purchase from you. But, you know, something that I've been curious about is how do you know who to trust? You know, with the advent of the internet, you get stuff flying at you from all directions. And when you research, valid vendors, I guess, or growers, I'm not sure what you would call it, but how do you know who to trust?
Well, one thing that I like to recommend is that you go local. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of really great herbalists around the country who are studying at great herb schools and going to some of the many herbal conferences that exist around the country. I personally teach at the Southeastern Wise Women Conference and the New England Women's Herbal Conference. There's a great conference in Brighton Bush. There's some in Wisconsin. They're all over. And the women, and particularly women who go to these conferences, they get a lot of great knowledge, and they're really immersing themselves in a tradition in a very valuable way. And then they come back to their communities, and they run their apothecaries and their clinics. And so if you can find these women locally, they're the ones who are working on the grassroots level and really expanding their own understanding of herbs in a way that's really trustworthy and mm-hmm. really helpful.
Yeah. And do you think, you know, like, so I've raised bees somewhat over the years, and I'm a firm believer that, you know, it's best to eat the honey within a 100-mile radius of your home. Do you think it's equally as important to utilize the plants from within your own vicinity?
Well, it's an interesting concept that what grows near you is what you need. And there's no way to prove it, but it's a very intuitive kind of concept that if there are certain weeds that grow near you, that's probably what you need to use. Mm-hmm. For instance, here on Martha's Vineyard, Lyme disease is rampant. We have a lot of deer ticks and a lot of mm-hmm. cases of Lyme. And there's an herb that is it's actually called an invasive Japanese knotweed that in the past 20 years has popped up all over the island. And it really coinciding with the epidemic of Lyme disease. And I think that's very telling, you know, that Mother Nature is trying to tell us something.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, yeah, I think using the plants that are near you is great. It reduces, you know, shipping costs as well, and is easier on the environment. But spiritually, it's a very nice connection to connect and use the plants that are near you.
Mm-hmm. And what's next for you, Holly? What do you have coming up that we can look forward to tapping into?
Yeah, well, I have an intensive this June. It's a 2-week training program here on Martha's Vineyard. It'll be sunny and beautiful here on the island, and its enrollment is open till June 1st. And then this fall, I'm teaching out near Vancouver a 5-day women's retreat, and that'll be hands-on crafting and lots of fun and lots of delicious tea drinking. Yeah, and then I have a book coming out next year on herbal foods and drinks, very nourishing, sustaining types of foods and drinks.
It sounds like we need to get you to Michigan for one of your 1-week intensive trainings.
Absolutely, I would love to.
We're going to have to connect after this. So I have a quick question. I posed to my friends if they could ask you a question, what would they like to know about? And I'm in my 50s, so a lot of my friends are in their 50s, and they want to know what are some of the herbs that they can use for hot flashes and menopause?
Yeah, that's a pretty common question. Plants are great for menopause in many different ways. You know, I could go into great detail about it, obviously, but a quick answer would be I tend to use black cohosh. Mm-hmm. It's pretty specific for hot flashes, but I also, more generally, I use licorice and lemon balm. Those are good adrenal support herbs and tend to be really helpful for women in menopause when your estrogen and progesterone are plummeting. So that's a good place to start, and then work with your local herbalist to work out the details and what's best for you individually.
Well, that's awesome. You hear that, ladies? Get to the store, get some black cohosh, licorice, lemon balm, and connect with your local herbalist. Well, we are down to the wire. We have just about a minute and a half left to wrap it up here. And I really want to thank you for being here, Holly, for sharing your work and for answering the call to to write and interview and share the women healers of the world. It's fascinating. And
thank
I love
Sherry.
My guests to leave the listeners with one thought that they can take out into the day to elevate their soul or inspire their lives. What would that be for you?
Just to recognize that you're part of a huge tradition, especially if you're an herbalist or a plant person or a gardener. Even if the only contact you have with plants is to drink a cup of tea now and then, that puts you in the center of a really wonderful heritage that you can explore infinitum and get a lot of value out of it and grow as a person, and I encourage you to do that.
That literally gave me chills from head to toe. Really,
thank
I appreciate
you, Sherry.
That. And I'm so grateful that you were here today, Holly. I look forward to checking out the rest of your work and getting you here to Michigan. Listeners, you can find all of Holly's information on the Soulful Living page here at EmpowerRadio.com. Thanks, Holly.
Thank you, Terry.